So on Sunday night or Monday morning, it like struck me after watching parts of Chaim Kanievsky's Levaya that perhaps there was a connection between his things at his Levaya and the Parsha. But I spent the whole week trying to find someone who maybe made the connection that was in my head. And I did not watch it. Was not successful. But what I ended up finding was three other answers to a question that's bothered me for a while. So in the end, it was like a pretty interesting like way of how the Chabura unfolded. So I'm going to share all that with you, and then I'm going to maybe take a leap of faith at the very end and share one more possibility as well. So if you read the Midrashim, which we have in the past on Parashat Shmini, you'll note that everybody's bothered by the big question. What went wrong in this week's parsha? Why did Nadav and Avihu have to die? In fact, yesterday, when I went for a walk in the morning, I was by myself, so I actually planned on listening to a shiur, and I got through the first 30 seconds of Nechama Price from this past Sunday at, I guess, Kollel Yom Rishon for the women. And then my phone rang, and I spent the rest of my walk on the phone. So, but she starts the shiur, which was excellent, the first 30 seconds at least, with the question. She's like, everybody likes a good mystery, a good whodunit. Like, we're so bothered by the question here. What did they do wrong that ends up leading to their death? And if you read the Midrashim, excuse me, the Midrashim make it clear that they don't know what they did wrong, because there is a laundry list of things that they did wrong. And the more answers you get generally, the more uncertain the Medrash, the Mefarshim are as to what was done wrong. So I'd like to try today to take a look at a pretty famous Rashi that suggests a couple of answers of what they did wrong, and to try to analyze that a little bit more carefully. But before we do that, I think we have to take a look at the seven psukim of the story, try to ask some questions, figure out what exactly happened, and then once we do that, I think we're in a better position to try to solve at least a piece of the mystery. Although, with full disclosure, I think when we're done, we'll probably have just as many questions as we had when we started, but at least we'll have a broader understanding of some of the concepts in the stories. So, if you take a look at the first source, like Chubnei Aaron, Nadav Avihu, Ish Machtato, Nadav and Avihu each take their fire pan. They put fire in it. They put upon ketoret, and they put upon it a esh zara, a strange fire that they weren't commanded to. So, at least to me, the second and third question, obviously the first question is the overarching question of what did they do wrong. The second and third question to me are, what's an esh zara? What exactly does that mean? And the third question is, Asher lo tziva otam, who is the tziva? Who commanded them not to do it? And again, probably we would David looks like he has a puzzled look. No?
Wait, who commanded them not to do it?
Right, anyway, it says
They
Asher lo
weren't
tziva
commanded.
otam, right, when it says Asher lo tziva otam, the question is, whose command was it that you can't bring an esh zara?
Oh, are
it's the
you
other way
reading that as a
around.
negative? They weren't commanded to do it, not they were
Right.
commanded not to do it.
Right, they weren't commanded. Yeah, so meaning there is
So
a.
you're not going to find someone who commanded them not to do it. They weren't commanded to do it. Not the same.
You're asking who
I'm
didn't command
David.
them.
A
What's
share.
that?
You're not asking, well, you're asking who didn't command them.
Okay, so you want to session. Fine. So then I guess the question is, when it says tziva, I'll ask the question differently. Point well taken. When it says tziva, who is the source of that command?
God.
Are you right? So l'chora, you would think it's God, right? That's what you would think. I was shocked when someone gave a different answer. So we're going to circle back to that. Again, I don't think that's pshat, that other answer. Yeah.
Another question.
Sure.
So only the Aish was described as Zara. meaning that another for the normal process is that if a Kohen brought a Ketoret on his Machatato, then Hashem would send the fire to burn it, or would the Kohen light it on fire? The reason I ask is, why weren't the Ketoret also described as Zara?
Right. So the normal process in the Mishkan, the Mikdash, was that you did not wait for a divine fire to consume it. You used your own fire. So if you think about the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, the Kohen Gadol brought Ketoret into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So what does he do? Like, obviously, if you just drop Ketoret in the in front of the staffs of the Aron HaKodesh, nothing's going to happen. So he brought in a small container of Ketoret, and then he brought a machta, a fire pan with hot coals. He put the hot coals down, poured the Ketoret on it, and then it burnt and filled up the Kodesh HaKadoshim with smoke, which allowed for the process of the Korban to happen. So that's typically what happened. On the opening day of the Mikdash, so what happens? They actually bring no fire, and it says Atetze Eish Milifnei Hashem. We're going to see in the following pasuk bet, we also have the words Atetze Eish Milifnei Hashem. But the pasuk immediately before this pasuk Vayikchu Bnei Aaron is Atetze Eish Milifnei Hashem, Vatochal Mizbeach Atolav Vetachalavim, Vayarkalam Vayarunu Vayplu Al Pneihem. Right, and everybody falls on their face, and Hashem's presence appears there. So, yeah, they were not supposed to bring a fire on this day. Again, we're going to take a look at that also in a little bit to try to understand what exactly that means, that they're not supposed to bring a fire.
Right, but they weren't supposed to bring the Ketoret either, and that wasn't described as foreign.
Correct. Seems like right. It seems like the fire itself was the problem. We did this a few years ago. It's the explanation. I don't remember who says it, but that they watched their father and their uncle trying to get the fire going from God, and nothing happened. And they were like, "Shoot, there's like millions of people that are waiting for the presence of God to come through this fire, and it looks like we failed." So they're like, well, maybe Moshe and Aaron just aren't up to the job. So they themselves choose to do it, and they bring a fire. So meaning it's in their mind, it's justified. Unfortunately, it's still an Eish Zara.
It should be pointed out that on Yom Kippur, he didn't like take a match. It was the continuous fire that was always burning in the Beis Hamikdash or the Mishkan.
Yeah.
The coals came from.
Right.
It was never extinguished. Meaning the original fire never went out. The coals always existed, and they always added wood to the coals to keep the coals going, even if there was no carbon on the overnight.
Okay.
That's a possible, right? H2 kind of whatever to make two gallons back.
Correct. Correct. So it's not, in this case, they brought external fire. The Kohen, the example that we were talking about, we entered the Kodesh Kadoshim, he is bringing the original fire with him and the Ketoros.
But we didn't start the fire.
No, the fire is the
responsibility.
Yes, thank you.
right, I hear it. Yeah, no, that's a good point. But even so, I think there we'll admit that there is a difference like that from after day one. It's sustained by man, right? Yes. Like if we don't feed the fire, like the fire is going to go out, as opposed to this moment where we expected that the fire would be lit by God.
It's a little bit like the Paraduma. You can keep adding water as long as you have a little bit left.
Right.
Okay. Or you can never have too much water in the reactor, but we'll talk about that another time.
But it's not bottle, meaning it's not bottle. It's you keep adding to it and it keeps continuing. And that's just the way it is. And same with the fire.
Right. It has the base of the original. Okay, pasuk bet. Vateitze eish milifnei Hashem, vatochol otam, vayamutu lifnei Hashem. A fire comes out from God and it consumes them and they die. Vayomer Moshe Aaron, who asher the Hashem leimor bekorai kadesh al pnei chal amek aved vaydom Aaron. Moshe says to Aaron, "This is what God said that bekorai kadesh, that he's going to become sanctified through the people that are close to him, and in the face of the entire nation, I will be sanctified. And Vaidom Aaron. Aaron is silent. Vaikram Moshe el Mishael ve'el Tzafan b'nei Uziel dod Aaron. Moshe calls Mishael and El Tzafan, who are the sons of Uziel, who is Aaron's uncle. So he calls Aaron's first cousins. I've read this pasuk thousands and thousands of times. It's my bar mitzvah parsha, so I've read it even more times than any other parsha. I never realized that they're cousins, even of Aaron, even though I should have, like, it's so obvious, Dod Aharon, but I don't know, somehow I thought it was like the cousins of, not even of you, but it's I guess not. I mean, they're also cousins, but the relationship is the cousins to Aaron, first cousins. And they say, come close, carry them from in front of the Kodesh to outside of the Machne. So just a question, this is not a question, I'll answer it right now. I saw a nice pshat. Why is it that we need this whole family like tree here? Just like tell us that it's Mishael and El Tzafan. Or write Mishael and El Tzafan b'nei Uziel if Mishael and El Tzafan are not mentioned anywhere else in Chumash. But once you say b'nei Uziel, you automatically know it's Dod Aaron because we have the family tree to know that Uziel is the son, is the brother of Amram. So why do we need this? The Rabbeinu Bachaye says Uziel was similar to Aaron. I think like in the Gemara, we often say, if you want to know if a person is a good person, look at their uncle. So look at the Dod Aharon, look at the uncle of Aaron. He was just like Aaron. He was an Oev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. Again, it's a cute chat. It's a nice parenthetical thought, but I just wanted to share it with you. But my real question on this pasuk, actually two of them, are as follows. First off, Kirvu. So if you look at it in a Chumash, I get rid of the trap because it bothers me. But if you look at, I should have kept it on this one pasuk. It's a very strange word. Kirvu has two notes. Now, it's not the only place in the Torah that there's two notes, but it has a klisha gedola, and a gershayim all together. That's not common. I don't think there are very many times of that in the Chumash. So why do we have two notes? That's the first question. And the second question is, why do they have to come close? Meaning, if you're telling me su'ut acheicha mei pnei hakodesh, take your brothers out of the kodesh, isn't that obvious that you have to go kirvu? How else are you going to do that? Meaning, we don't tell the chevra kadisha come close to the body and carry it to the grave. It's understood that if you're going to carry it to the grave, you're going to, at some point or another, have to go from far away to close by. So why is that? So the Chizkuni offers an interesting answer. He says, "Ein lachem l'dog min haketzef." He says, you don't have to be worried about the anger of God. Okay, so we're going to try to understand a little bit more what that means. And that's my fourth question. And then the psukim continue by kruvu vayseum b'chutanotam l'chutz ha'machaneh kasher diber Moshe. They come close and they carry them in their clothing outside of the machaneh like Moshe had commanded. Again, you could probably ask the same question again. Why do we need the word vayikruvu if they did kasher diber Moshe? Isn't it obvious just by telling us vayisaum that they did what they were supposed to do? Vayomer Moshe l'Aaron l'Elazar l'Tamar b'nav r'sheichem al tifro v'lichem al tifro m'lo tamutu v'kol ha'dai tzof. So Moshe then turns to his nephews and Aaron. He says, "Do not have any signs of avelus at all. Don't do anything to your clothing. Don't do anything to your hair. And nobody else will die. This could end here. And it's the Jewish people that will mourn your brothers and what God did by burning them." And from the door of the Ohel Moed, you should not leave because otherwise you'll die because the oil of God is anointed upon you. And they listened to Moshe. So what's going on here? We know that there's no avelus by a Kohen Gadol. So the Kohen Gadol, there's no aninus, anything. So why would it, we understand why Aaron has to do that, but why is it that Elazar and Itamar, the other two brothers, also had to do it. So I don't know where I saw it, but one of the, it could be the Gemara, it could be the Mefarshim, they say that the day one becomes a Kohen, their first day as a Kohen, they have the status of a Kohen Gadol, and therefore even a Ninus doesn't apply to them. So that's why Aaron, Elazar, and Itamar are all off the hook, and it all falls upon even Mishael and Elazar and El Tzafan are the ones that have to bring the brothers out. Okay, so those are our psukim. Any questions? Oh, David, yeah.
Question. Pasuk Hey. The cousins, Mishael and El Tzafan, take Nadav and Avihu in their clothes outside the camp. Who's it talking about are in their clothes? The live Kohan or the dead Kohan?
I assume that it's the dead Kohanim. I think it's, you know, I would think that, you know, probably we know that they're not going to do that naked.
But if they're wearing their big day kahuna, the Menachana, that's a big deal.
They're not. Oh, so that's the thing. It's funny. I was actually about to say that, and then it like fell out of my head. They're not Kohanim.
But they're not Kohanim.
Right, like it's
they're just Levium.
Right, it's the weirdest thing. It's the first time, it's the only time in history that you're going to have two brothers where one is a Kohen and one is a Levi, and they have like the same parents.
Well, Amram, it's not even that. Amram wasn't a Kohen either.
Right, right. It's just Aaron and his four sons were Kohanim. Even the Chiddush here is that even Pinchas, who was born at the time, so he's the child of Elazar, was a Levi. He only becomes a Kohen after he kills Zimri. So he gets Brit Kunat Olam. He becomes a Kohen. So they did not do it in their big day Kohuna. Okay, fine. So let's take a look at Rashi. So Rabbi Eliezer says that what they did wrong was they were Mora Halacha in front of their Rebbeim. Rabbi Shmuel Omer Shtuya Yaya Nichnasu LaMikdash. And Rabbi Shmuel says they were drunk. Fine. Those are the two answers that Rashi gives. So that, you know, that's far from the only answer, but we can understand why Rashi says Shtuya Yayin, they were drunk, because the very next pasuk after this paragraph is God says to Aaron, I want you to know it's forbidden to enter into the Beis HaMikdash ever drunk. If you're already doing that, if you're already telling us you can't come into the Beis HaMikdash drunk, what is that telling us? What's the connection between one piece and the other? It's telling us that in all likelihood, there is a connection. They were drunk. Don't do it again. But what's the connection to Al Yedei Shahoru Halacha B'fnei Moshe Rabban? That they were Mora Halacha B'fnei Moshe Rabban. So we're going to take a look now at the Nesivas Shalom, the Slanim Rebbe, who gives a beautiful explanation of Rashi. Okay, we're going to start at the beginning, and we'll skip a little bit, passively a lot, depending on how it goes. V'alpi zeh yesh lomar ha'inyan. D'Nadav Avihu achein hayu gedolim Moshe Aaron. Nadav and Avihu were greater than Moshe and Aaron. It's a pretty big deal. It's based on, I didn't read the whole Rashi pasuk gimel, but Rashi there says that what at the very end he says, Amar lo Moshe l'Aaron, Aaron achi yodea iti shet kadesh abayit miyudav shel makom, v'iti savur o bi o bach, achshav roa ani shehem gedol mimeni u mimecha. I knew that someone was going to die today, and that through that the mikdash was going to get, become like sanctified. I just thought it was going to be me and you, and it turns out that they're gedolim mimeni u mimecha. Okay, so we have to understand, what is Rashi saying when he says gedolim mimeni umimeka? Is that really true? Moshe is not one to lie, but what does that mean that they're greater than Moshe and Aaron? So
if you're thinking literally, then the other shot doesn't make sense. They said that they're more alach b'fei rabban. If they were bigger, then they weren't
right
being disrespectful.
Amazing, Shmuel. We probably can skip most of the entire first paragraph, first column, and half of the second column now, because that's exactly the Nesivas Shalom's problem with Rashi. But we're going to have to do it anyway because I think he helps it unfold nicely, and I think it gives like a good understanding of it. But yeah, that is definitely a big problem with Rashi. If it's true, G'dolim Mimeni Mecca, then how do you reconcile it with Ayidei Shehoru Halacha B'Fnei Moshe Rabban? Excellent. Okay, so he says, K'mo Shamar Moshe L'Aaron V'Achshap B'nach G'dolim Mimeni U'Mimecca, Ach B'Zeh Hayah P'gam Shalehem B'Nekuda Azot Shafilu M'Makabel Yoter G'dolim Ashpia M'Kol Makom Hu Muchrach L'Hichanai Lav. So that's actually the crux of what the Nesivas Shalom says, which is the beginning of the answer to Shmuel's question, is that even if I the pigam in them is that even if I am greater than someone, I still have to bow myself in front of them. So I guess, you know, it bothered me yesterday, but it just like occurred to me that this is probably the way to understand it. Many people find themselves in this problem. They feel that they know more, or they really do know more than their boss. I was at a conference once when I was already a principal. It was like very depressing. The statistic is that 83% of principals are not effective. Yeah, that's like, imagine what that means for the educational system. Yeah, only 17% are actually effective. So if 83% of principals are ineffective, that means that probably most teachers are smarter or more effective than their bosses. I don't think that teaching is the only industry that has that. There are many, many industries where you sit there at a meeting and your boss opens his mouth and you're like, did he really just say that? Like, I don't understand. So, but at the end of the day, right, we're still obligated because of the structure of how things work. We have to listen to our boss. So if a person realizes that they're smarter than their boss and they let their boss know that too often, in all likelihood, they'll be, you know, looking for employment elsewhere. So what the Nesiva Shalom says is, Shafilu makabel yoter gadol mi'amashpia mikol makom hu muchra lichnai lav. Ki zohi aneshama shal yada tzarich lagi elav ha-shefa elyon, V'heim savru kevin shem gedolim yoter Moshe ve'aron k'mo shem aleihem b'krovai kadesh hakrovim biyoter. They thought they were closer to God. So they thought just because we're greater, we're also closer to God. Al kein einam tzrichim likashrot Moshe aron k'dei l'kabel ha-shefa. Therefore, we don't have to accept or get the abundance of greatness that comes off of Moshe Rabbeinu. Al kein horu halacha b'fnei Moshe Rabban mishum shesavru shein ze rabban. That's why they were there. They therefore decided that they would be Mora Halacha before their Rebbe. Why? Because they didn't think that they actually were Moshe and Aaron, their Rebbe. Kemen Shem Madrega Yoter Gavoa. V'zeh gam inyan omrim matay yamutu shnei zekenim alalu v'adniv ata nanhiga el hador. And that understands the other thing that they said wrong according to the Medrash, which was, when will these two old men die so that we could take over? They thought that they would offer a greater leadership to the Jewish people, to take it to the highest level of all time. What they didn't realize was that they were losing that connection to the source above. V'zel pirush v'yikriv leishas arashal tzivotam k'day sham v'gemar Hashem darshu min ha'ktuv v'natnu b'nei Aaron sh'afal pisha ishi yoredet min ha'shamayim mitzvah lavi min ha'edyot. They paskened, right, David, this is to your point earlier, do you need why eish zara? So they paskened that in general, you don't need a eish from shamayim, but normally the way it works is mitzvah lavi min ha'edyot, that man takes the fire. So like Sreli said, you take the coal off the mizbeach, and that becomes the fire that will make your karban. They paskin, that's how it's supposed to be. So it's okay to take a fire from there. The ketav al zeh Rashi she'aforu karaui na enshu shalot nidlu rishut. Rashi, the Nesiva Shalom is saying something amazing here. He's saying that they, even if they paskined correctly, they still needed rishus from Moshe Rabbeinu. It says, even if the drasha itself was right, right, this is like a little like chassidish here, but even if your Rebbe would paskin what you did anyway, the fact that you didn't ask him shows that they were not kfufim l'Moshe, that they were not subservient to Moshe. If you could, basically, I think what he's saying is Eish Zara is a stray philosophy, right? If you're willing, and that's probably why it's not the Ketoret, but it's the fire, which is where they went wrong. Even if Moshe would have said that, even if Moshe would have paskin that way, nonetheless, they did the wrong thing. Let's skip all the way down to the bottom. Four lines from the bottom. That's how the Slonim Rebbe reads the pasuk. Asher lo tziva otam is that Moshe didn't command them. This is not God, but Moshe didn't command them to do that. Acher shesavru debiotam gedolim Moshe v'Aaron einam tzvichem lipkashrot el hamashpia. They felt that they did not have to reach out to Moshe. Okay, so that is quite a understanding of Rashi. And basically the message is, it doesn't matter if you're greater, the leader is the leader, and you have to respect the leader for that. Okay.
It's not Rashi's pshat, it's Rabbi Elazar's pshat.
Yeah, okay, fine. But I'm saying the piece of Rashi that's saying that it was Mora Halacha. Thank you. Fair point that the real source is Rabbi Eliezer in the Gemara. Okay, let's take a look at the second page. We're not going to read that paragraph inside, although I will say that this set of Svarim, sometimes, you know, Malki questions why I have so many Svarim. And I have told people, two people that are making Aliyah this summer, I told both of them that they should start working on like paring down their Svarim now. More than a third of our lift was boxes of Svarim, and that was getting rid of one whole bookcase worth of Svarim. But every once in a while, I open up a set of Svarim and I find the Dvar Torah, and I'm like, this is, it was worth that Sefer just for this. So this is a 5-volume set that was worth it just for this Pshat. The question that the Otsor Satora wants to know is, why did they have to die now? We know that they were supposed to die. It says, Ve'atzilei b'nei Yisrael shalach yadu. God did not kill these people in Matan Torah. And we're told that the Atzilei b'nei Yisrael were Nadav and Aviyu. Nadav and Aviyu, like their eyes focused in on the Shekhinah. And by doing that, God got angry at them, but he didn't want to ruin Matan Torah. So God doesn't want to ruin Matan Torah, so instead God ruins what? Chanukah Mizbeach, the opening of the Mishkan. How does one, right, why does that make sense? So he tells a story that answers this, and the story goes as follows. There was a king, and this king had a province that he went to go visit, and on his visit to the province, he turns to all the people and says, like, I just want to know, like, you know, this is like, you know, your opportunity to tell me, are you guys happy with how this kingdom is being run? And are you happy with the life that you have in this village? And everybody gives the, oh yeah, yeah, it's great. We love it, king. It's amazing. Thank you so much for coming. And then one guy in the back raises his hand and says, actually, you know what? I do have a complaint. We don't have a doctor here. If we had a doctor, life would be much better. King says, you know what? You're right. A town this size deserves a doctor. So it shall be written, so it shall be done. He sends over a doctor. Okay? The day that the doctor arrives, he decides he's going to be there. It's a big moment. Thousands of years in the making. They've never had a doctor. He comes and says, no, we have a doctor here in Mazel Tov. They throw a whole ceremony in honor of the doctor. As luck would have it, as the doctor arrives, some guy stumbles in front of the king and he's in bad shape. He's sick. Wow, look at the timing. It's amazing. The doctor is here. So the doctor takes a look at the guy, diagnoses his symptoms, and says everything is good. He prescribes certain like medicines and whatever. and everything is good. So they give the guy the medicines he needs, and he drops dead. So the king turns to the doctor and says, I understand, like, you're supposed to be like a really good doctor. Like, you lose your first patient, and come on, between you and me, this was not even something major. It wasn't like that he had like a massive heart attack in front of you, and the statistics of saving him are not great. The guy had something pretty common. Even without your care, probably he could have, like, you know, chicken soup and he would have been better. It's like, what happened? So the doctor turns to the king and says, King, I'll be honest with you. I actually diagnosed him wrong on purpose. I gave him the wrong medicines and I killed him. The king looks and says, like, are you kidding me? Like, here it is. I bring you from the big city. I set up like shop here. Like, why did you do that? So he says, this is like not going to work very well with like medical ethics, but he says, I actually have a fear. Until now, for thousands of years, this town survived without a doctor. Why? How did they manage? People made sure to take care of themselves, preventative medicine. They did all, they ate right, they took care of themselves. All of these things were done. Why? They were done because the people knew that they didn't have a doctor, and they knew that if they got sick, in all likelihood, the sickness would take their lives. So they were excessively careful to do all the right things to make themselves live. He goes, now that they have a doctor, you know what they're going to open up? There'll be a McDonald's here. People will start eating fast food because they'll figure, what's the big deal? High cholesterol, I'll go to the doctor. Bad heart, I'll go to the doctor. He goes, I wanted it to be clear to all the people from the very get-go that you still have to take care of yourself. If you don't take care of yourself, the doctor won't be able to do anything. Says the Otsus HaTorah, that's what was happening on the opening day of the Mishkan. Until now, the people said, we know that if we want forgiveness, it's contingent upon us. We have to daven, we have to reach out to God, otherwise we won't be forgiven. But going forward, now that they have a Mishkan, he was concerned that what would the people say? We don't have to do anything anymore. We don't have to behave the right way. Why? I sin, I bring a korban chatas, and I'm forgiven. God kills them that day to say, even if you have Schus Moshe Rabbeinu as your uncle, Schus Aaron as your father, it won't save you if you do the wrong thing. Okay? So that's the second answer. The third answer is Rabbi Tzion Fuhrer. I won't share it with you inside. It's starting to get a little bit late on your end. And I still have a couple more minutes left. But Fuhrer, interestingly, compares the story to the story of Korach. So what are the connections to Korach? I mean, we have Nadav and Avihu, Dasan and Aviram, it's twos, but we have fire. Okay, good. Yeah, fire consumes and kills the people in both stories. They also have Machtot in both stories. Any other connection that you could think of?
Paskin in front of the Rebbe, so in a way.
Okay, could be Korach, you know, Paskin that, certainly the arrogance of Korach is similar to the way the Nesiva Shalom describes what Mora Halacha B'fnei Rabbo is. Okay, excellent. Any other connections that you could think of?
I mean, the bodies were cleared away, but I'm not sure that.
Right, except God does it by opening up the ground and swallowing them up. So I thought that the biggest connection was that in both cases, they die what we call a mita meshuna, a very, very, very strange and different death. Why is that? And Rav Fuhrer asks, why is it specifically by Korach that Moshe Rabbeinu davens and demands from God that their death should be something that is so different? Why is that? So Rav Fuhrer says that sometimes when you have a movement like Korach, the fear is that even after the head of the movement dies, the movement continues to live on. Maybe not as actively, but the seeds of the rebellion, of the revolution, continue in the hearts and minds of other people. But if they die in a way that is so jarring, what's going to happen is the death will force people to realize that this is not a movement that should be continued. It's not a movement that should be emulated. Right? I want to cut the cord with them. So what Moshe, what Führer is suggesting is that what happens in both stories is there is the fear that perhaps it will continue with the next with other people, and by God killing them the way they're killed, nobody seeing Nadav and Avihu's corpses lying on the floor in the Mikdash or being dragged out like that says, "Wow, that's something that I hope will happen to me one day." So it kind of like it turns off the movement before it gains any steam. That's what Ben Sion Führer's answer. So I'll end just by sharing with you my own thought. Again, I could be wrong with this, but in the parasha itself, there is this idea of kirvu. Multiple times we have the word from the beginning of Shemini until the death of Nadav and Avihu and their bodies being removed from the Mishkan itself. We have the shorish karav, to come close. Why is it? So obviously, the idea in our parsha, which is said over and over again, is that we're trying to open up the Mishkan, and the way we open up the Mishkan is through karav, through coming close to God. Nadav and Avihu tried to come close to God by akrivu lefnei Hashem eish zara. They wanted to come close to God. That's what happened, and yet what ends up happening is God says it doesn't work that way. I saw it when I tuned into like the end of the Levayas. They were bringing Rav Chaim's body in the ambulance or whatever to the cemetery. You saw people that were like causing like the funeral to slow down by jumping in front and trying to grab and touch the ambulance so that they could like have a little bit of a connection to the body. I thought it was like so strange. And if you watch the Levi, it was on YouTube streaming, so you get the comments and everything. And people are, you know, why are they doing this? It's Chil Hashem, blah 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 blah. But I thought about it for like a day afterwards. Why is it that people feel the need to touch the hearse that's carrying the aron? Why is it? So I think that what happens is that sometimes people feel this need to become karov, but what the Torah is telling us is that when you become karov, it has to be done in a real way, meaning don't make up the rules as you want, eish zara, right? You can't come close on your own terms. It has to be on the terms of God. So you want to become karov to God, don't try to grab and touch the coffin of a tzaddik, but look at the ways of the tzaddik and try to become similar to him. But I think that's actually Moshe, and this will answer the last question, what's pshat in kirvu, the strange one with the double notes and whatever. By having the double notes, it's read in a way that it like really sticks out in the reading of the pasuk, is that Moshe Rabbeinu is also telling them, he's telling his cousins, kirvu, don't fear the dead, but also don't worship them. Right, don't think that they did the right thing, but also like don't be afraid of them. Kirvu, come close, and understand that like you have to like look at them, understand what they did wrong, confront the reality, acknowledge what they did wrong, learn and move on from them. Don't turn them into a religion; that's the wrong way to do it. But also, we don't fear the dead in Judaism. We don't fear that there's something wrong with them. We do it, we accept it, and we move on. So again, I think that is a little bit of a understanding of what's going on with Nadav and Avihu and their death. I hope that this, if not making the story clearer, at least gives us a richer understanding of parts of the story. And I'm sure we'll return to it many, many times in the years to come, just as baffled, but you know, hopefully finding a little bit of a deeper understanding of it. Have a great Shabbos, everyone.